strategies in shaping policy?
Well, good morning. I kind of feel like the black sheep among our presenters because I don't actually have any data to show you, so I apologize for that in advance. I want to spend our time together today talking about a couple of different things. If I can get this ready to go. First, I want to spend a little time talking about the role that public employees can play in shaping policy at the state level, and then I want to spend a little time reviewing some of the SED policies that are percolating through various legislatures across the country. So first, let's talk about the role that public employees can play in shaping public policy at the state level. So for some of you, I think that's probably a very novel and maybe a strange and kind of scary idea for a lot of you. And if you feel that way and you're a public employee, you're certainly not alone. There are, after all, an awful lot of laws that are designed specifically to keep public employees out of the public policy process. But generally speaking, I think that public employees, state employees, can engage in a good deal of education efforts and policy education around particular issues without any kind of problem whatsoever. So what is policy education? Well, it's safe harbor activity. It's basically involves providing policymakers and their staff with facts, figures, budget information, data, reports, that kind of material, but without making any particular kind of recommendation on a particular policy or a regulation. Again, it's permissible activity for public employees. Now, policy advocacy is a very different story. It's a little bit harder to define, and it kind of rests in this gray area with regard to whether it's permissible or not for public employees. It typically involves general support for a general policy, so for example, lowering STD rates, but without making a particular recommendation or pointing towards a particular policy that you would support. Now again, this may or may not be permissible in your state, but it's worth looking into because I think a lot of times advocacy can be a little bit more effective than policy education. Because with policy advocacy, there's at least a general ask that you can make of policymakers. So be sure to make sure, be sure to look and see if that's permissible in your state or not. Now, policy lobbying is not permissible in any state that I'm aware of. If you know of a state where this is lawful, please see me after the presentation. I'd like to meet you and set you straight. It entails opposing or recommending a specific policy, law, or standard. Again, this isn't permissible in any state. So I imagine that you may well be thinking, if you're a public employee, that those are all very good definitions, but they don't do me a whole lot of good if I can't even initiate a conversation with the state legislature. And I think you're probably right in thinking that. For a lot of folks, I think it's tough to even get that initial conversation started. I was talking to a colleague of mine, Beth Butler from Pennsylvania, who was talking about, you know, even if a state legislature approaches them and wants to have a conversation with them, there's still a whole lot of levels that they have to go through, and other folks have to be in the room, and it's kind of a big deal. So I get that that can be really tough. But what I will say is that there are ways to get that conversation started, and that's what NCSD is here to help you guys do, is to help initiate those conversations. I want to say that a lot of policies with regard to STDs, a lot of big and important policies take place at the state level, so it is important for you guys to play a role and is important for you guys to get those conversations started, and we do have some resources to help you do that. So, one of which is our State Policy Training Academy. This is a new venture for us. It's basically designed for public employees that are working in either an HIV or an STD program to help them begin those conversations and be effective in those conversations with policymakers and when they're doing that kind of policy advocacy or policy education work. So it's divided up into four different modules. The first one talks specifically about how to engage policymakers and how to begin that education process, what you can and can't do, and then also a lot of talk about what you can do by working with your community partners and leveraging some of their resources as you're engaging in that education process. We also spend a lot of time in the second module talking about what effective public health messaging looks like. We talk specifically about how to craft messages that resonate not only with lawmakers, but also with the public in general, and resonates with them in a way that gets them motivated to take action on whatever issue you happen to be working on. The third module really is focused on helping participants learn how to take part in, or how to secure invitations to take part in legislative testimony. And once those invitations have been secured, how to maximize what the impact that you can make and what you can and can't say. And then also working through some of your community partners to make sure that all those messages that you and your partners can use are being maximized there. The fourth module is actually an in-person meeting where we get together some of the folks that took part in the Training Academy and have them kind of share stories of what worked and what didn't work for them as they were taking part in the policy education process. So I think that's probably a good thing for folks to, a good way for folks to share feedback with one another across different states. So in addition to the Training Academy, we also have a series of other resources that, again, are rather new to us. We're just now wading into the state policy arena. So recently we, I think actually these fact sheets hit this week. We sent out a series of fact sheets to every legislator across the country. That's 7,500 people. We sent them about four different pieces. So I think in all, people are getting like 28,000 pieces of stuff from NCSD this week. They're fact sheets that talk about the importance of STD programs and some of the impacts that budget cuts have had on those programs in the last couple of years. Those are rather general fact sheets, but if you're working on a particular policy and want to do policy education around a very specific issue, like maybe opt-out testing or EPT in your state, one of the resources that we have available to you is to help you craft that piece, design it, and mail it out to your legislators, or get it to you so you can distribute it as you see fit. We also have resources to help folks organize in-state briefings during legislative sessions. These briefings can be really helpful for folks, I think, because you can kind of organize and educate a whole slew of educators or a whole slew of legislators en masse, which saves a lot of time and a lot of effort, and I think is a good way to just get legislators kind of on the radar screen of STD programs. And, of course, I'm always available to help you guys strategize around different ways that you can take part in the policy process and the policy education process and provide you guys with any kind of technical assistance that you might need. So those are some of the ways that we help folks get involved in the policy education process. What I want to talk to you about now is some of the legislation that's percolating through various state houses across the country. Not just as kind of an FYI, but maybe to give you some ideas of what policies you might want to work on and do some education on in the coming sessions as well. So a number of states are working on expedited partner therapy. I imagine this is probably something that most folks know about. There are three states right now, or three or four states that I know of right now, that are working on EPT legislation. Florida and Virginia, the legislation seems to have stalled, but it seems to be flying through without any kind of opposition in Idaho. So if EPT can happen in my home state of Idaho, then it can happen anywhere. So there are no more excuses. So and if you're interested in learning a little bit more about why I think those two bills stalled in those states versus why it's going through so easily in Idaho, then please see me afterwards, because I think there are some really important things that you guys can do at your level to ensure that those bills are successful. So a couple of states are also working kind of in the very early stages of addressing the issue of STD billing. As I'm sure a lot of you guys know, statute prevents a lot of states from billing public and private insurance for STD services at public health departments. Obviously, this is a big deal given that it's a potential revenue source to offset those free services that public health departments provide. Again, this is something that usually requires a fix at the statute level. And New York serves as a really good example for a state that's in the very early stages of doing that, but Delaware has already delved into this and I think has solved their problem, and so they can serve as some really good model language. There's also some issues of confidentiality that I think are wrapped up in that, particularly around the explanation of benefits that you can also address in statute. So if that's something that's interesting to you, please see me. There are a couple of bills that are percolating through Oklahoma, Missouri, and Illinois around comprehensive sex ed. Of course, these are way more controversial than probably the other two, so it'll be interesting to see how those things progress. So I know that that's kind of some information that's very zoomed out and at the 30,000-foot level, but I'll say if any of you are public employees that are looking to wade into the policy process and do some education, please see me. I have business cards now. We'll connect, and I can certainly provide you guys with some technical assistance and add you to my ever-expanding roster of states that I'm working with. So that's all I have to say about that. Is there anyone that has any questions? Yes.
Can you please make your way to the mic, please?
I can talk really loudly.
So well, we're recording this session, like everyone to go to the mic.
Just your question.
Thank you, Burke. Can you talk about those modules? How does one gain access to those? Are they online?
Yeah, so we do one cohort a year. The first three modules are online. They're interactive. It's me talking. When I screw something up, people hear it. The fourth module is in person. We'll probably bring some folks to Washington or maybe meet somewhere else. But again, we do it once a year. So we've already closed participation for this year since we're halfway through those modules. But we'll start recruiting for folks probably this summer for the second cohort. So be on the lookout for that. Yeah. Anyone else?
I have a question.
Yes.
Yeah. Hi. Someone, are you partnering at all with NASDAQ in your work, and given that we're trying to think a lot about integration of HIV and STI, I'm wondering if at these association levels there's some integration going on.
Yeah, so we have partnered with NASDAQ, which I think if you're not familiar, that's the AIDS service version of NCSD. We've partnered with them in so much as that we've asked their members to participate if they're interested in those training academies. We've also co-branded those initial briefs that I talked about that just got sent out to all the legislators around the country. That was co-branded with them and not only focuses on STD, but also HIV, since they're both STDs. And I'm trying to think if there's anything else in particular that we've done with NASDAQ. I think that's it for the most part. Anyone else? Okay, well, thank you.